Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man who would like to remind you all that if you do not enjoy today's show, blame it on Jerry Gergich. Here is the captain.
Yeah, blaming it on Jerry is like treating yourself. It's good to be seen, and it's good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
We are still drinking this good stuff right here. We have a little half and half lemonade iced tea IPA by our friends at Evil Twin Brewing Company. This is a fantastic IPA for the hot days of summer. Refreshing with the lemonade and iced tea, garage grade 3 3/4 bottle caps out of 5. And here's some cheers to our good friends. First up, we have Serena in McLeansboro, Illinois.
And a big shout out to Christine K. and Parts Unknown.
Next up, we have Tristan in New Braunfels, Texas.
And a big shout out to Christina in High Ridge, Missouri.
And here we have a cheers to Ashley B. in Orange, California. And last but certainly not least, we have Ronnie in London, Ontario, Canada. Thank you all for helping us out with this week's Beer Fund. Check us out. Check out the store page. Check out the blog. Check out the recommended reading at truecrimegarage.com.
Yeah, and that's enough of the business.
All right, everybody, gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime. Jalik's grandparents, Barbara and her husband, Dennis Smith, well, they publicly called out their son-in-law, Stephen. In a Capital News 9 piece, Barbara said, quote, "I believe that Stephen is the only one who knows what happened to Jalik on November 1st, and I do believe he harmed him." She elaborated that earlier in 2007, Jocelyn asked Stephen to leave the home because she was afraid he would harm the children. According to Barbara, Stephen had anger management issues and had been going to counseling for them. They were so bad that Jocelyn had made him move out of the family home for brief periods, this twice in 2007, because of aggressive behavior towards the children. And after the stream incident that we talked about yesterday, Jocelyn forced Stephen to pen a letter of apology to Jalik for this and made him do the child's chores for 1 month. Barbara and Dennis enthusiastically helped Elaine Persons found the Find Jalik Task Force, getting billboards erected, holding vigils, and organizing volunteer searches. Those searches continued weekly even after police scaled back their official searches for Jalik, this in May of 2008. And also in May of 2008, Barbara petitioned the court to assign custody of Jalik over to her so that she could more actively pursue legal avenues to locating him, such as obtaining medical records and contacting homeless shelters on his behalf. She said she also wanted to ensure that the boy had a safe and stable home to come back to in the event that he was still alive. A Warren County judge ruled against her in July. Jeffrey McMorris, he's the attorney for the parents, said of her request, quote, "The grandmother here was just worried about her own publicity," end quote.
This lawyer is as big of a dirtbag as the father is.
At least he's getting paid to do so. The father's just being a dirtbag for
free. Well, no. He's getting paid, too. He's getting paid by the state.
That's true.
So they're both paid dirtbags.
Continuing with July 2008 here, Captain, the Albany Times Union reported that Jalik's grandmother, the one that we were just praising, was arrested and charged with second-degree burglary. This is based on a complaint from Jocelyn and Stephen. Apparently, Barbara entered the unlocked Raven Way house. This is where they were living.
Right.
And used a flashlight to do a little snooping, a little poking around, if you will. Remember, Stephen and Jocelyn were no longer living there at this time. They had already moved off to Vermont. A neighbor reported that someone was in the house. You know, you've seen this in the movies. All the lights are out. It's supposed to be dark over at the neighbor's home. Oh, no, you can see someone walking around with a flashlight in there. So the neighbor reported someone was in the house, and since her entry technically was unauthorized by the owners, Barbara was facing charges for this. She did plead not guilty in court, in a court proceeding which took place on July 15th. I think more interesting than her arrest is what could she have possibly found in the house, or what was she looking for?
Well, and whatever she would have found, it probably wouldn't have been admissible in the court of law.
Well, what we do have is shortly after this burglary, and I don't think this is any coincidence at all, the police executed a search warrant on the home.
Good. Well, I mean, look, here's a couple of things. I applaud what she's trying to do. I also applaud that she has no problem throwing her son-in-law under the bus. He doesn't seem to be cooperative. He doesn't seem to give a shit. You claim that this boy went missing on his own accord and you move? None of this stuff makes any sense. You're ripping down posters of this kid. You are not cooperative with police. You are caught lying over and over. You're still collecting money for a kid that you're not taking care of. You basically tried to kill this kid by drowning him. This is not a good dude, and I applaud the effort by turning on him and throwing him under the bus. But at the same time, we're not looking for a missing person anymore. We should be looking for a body. If the father is responsible, which it just makes the most sense, the logical connection, he's not responsible for the kid going missing. He's responsible for the kid's death. And we need to be looking for a dead body.
What the police was looking for with their search warrant was one item of interest. This was reported to be a piece of clothing that they stated that Barbara saw while she was inside that home. This was a bright yellow fleece pullover, the one Jalik was said to have been wearing when he disappeared, the same one that searchers were looking for as they scanned the woods, fields, and waterways. Usually, that's one of the things that they're really pointing out here with in regards to the searches. When you're looking for someone, it's very helpful when you're able to tell the searchers, hey, he or she was last seen wearing this bright red sweater.
Right.
Or this bright yellow fleece pullover, something that's easy to spot so you can move and clear land and keep going. Well, this fleece that they were told he was last wearing was found by Barbara in the home, and then later by police after they executed the search warrant. Turns out, obviously, this thing was in the house this whole time.
Well, it's just more proof that they're liars.
It's odd, too, that it was even left behind when they moved, right? Like, it seems like an oversight, because wouldn't this be something you would try to get rid of if you realized after the fact, oh, this happens to still be here, and I told everybody this is what he was wearing?
I don't think these are good people. I think these individuals try to use the system. Well, if we adopt these kids, we're going to get sent $1,500 a month as a stipend. We're not going to really clothe these kids or take care of these kids. We're not even going to try to pay for electricity or have heating in the house. And so, to me, it's not an oversight. That's just what kind of people these people are. They're lazy pieces of shit that don't want to work, that don't want, you know, that don't want to care for people, that they're going out of their way to take responsibility of these kids, but they don't even want to take care of those kids. They just want the stipend, therefore they don't have to work as hard.
It also kind of reminds you of the Dior Coons case, where they found an article of clothing in their home that he was supposedly wearing when last seen at the campsite.
Yeah.
The police did submit this fleece for testing. I don't know what really came of it. There's not been much said about it since it was located.
Right.
We did have this weird voice analysis thing, and we've seen this in some other cases. And this was brought in and gone about because, remember, Stephen would not agree to the polygraph test. So some people said, you know, you can use data, using data to determine whether he was lying or not with this voice analysis stuff.
Right.
So remember there was that strange interview that Stephen and Jocelyn gave to News 10. This was almost immediately after Jalik disappeared.
All right, the one where they didn't really answer a bunch of questions.
Correct. Well, at the request of this Find Jalik task force that has been formed, Texas Equisearch brought in two leading voice analysis experts to use a method called layered voice analysis, which measures changes in voice frequency to detect truthfulness and analyze the interview audio. Voice analysis expert and private investigator TJ Ward said, quote, "I have dealt with family members, and this is not the way family members react to someone missing, not at all," end quote.
Okay. But what do you make of this? Bringing in this expert. Doesn't seem like a huge waste of time to you? We already have evidence that this guy is a liar. So why spend any more time on the fact that he's not truthful?
Well, you're grasping for straws here is what you're doing. It's you know, it's the task force bringing in these experts via Texas Equisearch.
But do you think it's in some way, shape, or form like, well, we know he's lying. We know we've caught him lying multiple times, right? Is this their way of, if we bring in these experts and maybe they state that he's lying, maybe that puts a little more heat on the fire? A little more flame, a little more pressure on him to possibly come forward.
It's an interesting tactic because it's not the police bringing in these experts.
Right.
And it probably didn't cost them anything to do this work and to publicly state that they are doing this work. Really, you're, as you stated, turn up the heat a little bit. Shake some trees, see what falls out. Maybe he does feel the pressure and he goes and he talks to police. I mean, at some point in these investigations, when you really feel like you have the person or know the person to be responsible for whatever act it is or misdeeds that were done, if you got nothing on them, you got nothing on them.
Right.
But you still have them there in the spotlight and they can react. They can make mistakes. We've seen this alleged, and I want to be clear about that, alleged behavior and actions of this man that don't seem to be well thought out or well planned. And we've seen talk of him flying off the handle. Maybe you turn up the heat and he does something dumb.
Right. Well, he is dumb.
Barbara and Elaine and Jalik's other advocates prayed that these type of things would bring charges against Stephen Kerr, but we have to keep in mind, just like polygraphs, this layered voice analysis, the results of these are not admissible in court. Articles noting the one-year anniversary of Jalik's disappearance stated that police were still meeting regularly to discuss the case and share any leads or tips that might have come in, but the optimism was really fading around this one-year anniversary.
Well, I was just going to say, they need to be doing searches around his father's cabin where they were at that night, and then the cabin that they lived in with cadaver dogs. And I don't know if that has been done, but those are the searches that need to be done.
They were doing that early on, within the first hours and days of the boy having gone missing.
But the problem with all this is an area where there's a lot of wooded area, right? So it's a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah, they did a 5-mile radius search with the assistance of many different agencies, including the forest rangers, the state forest rangers. So around this first year anniversary, we have Chief Bell, who states that at this point, there was really little that they could do, they being the police, other than investigate leads that were coming in and wait for a break in the case. Because they've kind of exhausted everything by this point. The investigation, he said, had cost a fortune to that date, putting the police department well over their budget. The missing persons flyer issued a new one around the same time for Jalik by the State Division of Criminal Justice Services. It was updated at this time to reflect that Jalik had not run away, but had disappeared under unknown circumstances. As for the parents, the lawyer issued a statement saying that they continued to, quote, pray he is safe and will return home soon.
Do you think the mother just doesn't know?
I think that if the mother knows what happened, the only way she knows what happened is if she was told. I don't think she witnessed anything firsthand or was a part of anything in regards to the first 24 hours or 48 hours of the boy being missing.
Right.
18 months into this thing, roughly, May 13th, 2009, police and state forest rangers searched the banks of the Batenkill River. This is an area, well, it's an area that is called the Hellhole, and it's described as a swirling bulge in the river water. Cadaver dogs hit near this location, and police were aware that Stephen Kerr was very familiar with the area. Sounds like a lovely place.
Oh, because he's a shitbag. That goes with Hellhole, right?
Well, the family would camp in this area and had been known to do so.
Hey, kids, let's go at the old Hellhole.
Nothing was found in this search of the banks. Chief Bell said, we continue to get tips. The interest has not died off. We still want to find Jalik. This is all per News 10. And about a year and 4 months later, investigators returned to this area again, this time with state police dive crews on hand. The water level of the Batenkill River fluctuated, especially in the quote-unquote hellhole, and it was often unsafe for divers. Quote, it's a dangerous place to dive. There is metal and rebar and other stuff down there, said Chief Bell. This is per the Times Union. The chief described the site as a gorge at the bottom of a hydroelectric dam, which leads to a whirlpool. A New York State Police spokesperson said that the dive team searched that specific area because of its proximity to a hydroelectric dam. Because of the water pressure created by the dam, anything in the water there is pushed down into a very small area. So, I mean, this sounded like a perfect spot to hide something, to hide a body, maybe.
Right.
The search, unfortunately, was fruitless, or fortunately was fruitless. In 2009, a hunter walking in the woods near Lake Desolation in northern Saratoga County found skull fragments on the ground. It was determined that they were, in fact, human. and they were deemed to be the remains of a child estimated to be 10 to possibly 12 years old. It looks like at the time in 2009, Captain, there were 6 missing persons cases in the area that would meet or could meet this criteria.
Right.
Law enforcement officials, they jumped all over this, of course, and Jalik was one of the possible 6 missing persons that they thought it could be. Fortunately, it was not him. And some of their estimates were wrong with their findings. It turned out that the skull was the remains of a 18-year-old girl from Colorado, her name is Jennifer Hammond, who went missing in August of 2003. In March of 2010, police released an aged, enhanced portrait of Jalik that had been prepared by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Police held a press conference announcing the release of this photo to the media. Chief Bell said, quote, "I'm hoping this might spark some interest in the parents to come forward. It's 2.5 years later and they act like this never happened. They need to reach out and be cooperative with law enforcement," end quote. One thing I will really, really want to commend Chief Bell and others that do stuff like this. Again, we have a situation where we look at it from afar and we can say it really points to 2 possible outcomes.
Yeah.
Maybe the boy ran away, but we have evidence that the father is being less than truthful and is not being cooperative with police, and by his own admission and everybody else's account as well, he's the last one to have seen the boy.
Well, he has also temper issues, and he can be violent.
So if the boy didn't run away, this is your responsible person, your responsible party.
Right.
And one thing that I love about Chief Bell is anytime they have any reason to go to the media at all, he's circling the wagons and saying, hey, we're putting out this information, one, for the public to help us out, but two, because we want the parents. This is in efforts to get the parents to cooperate with us, to talk with us, to help us out. Now, Captain, we need to introduce somebody named Scott Thorpe, age 37.
Okay.
And his involvement or non-involvement in this case, I don't know how you want to look at it, but he's certainly, in my opinion, a big part of the story. Because in April of 2010, Scott Thorpe kidnapped a man who owed him money for drugs. He beat the guy up and showed him a photo of what appeared to be a dead body along with Jalik's missing persons flyer. He told the guy that he beat up that he had killed the kid and he would do the same to this guy if he didn't pay up on his debts. Then he and his goons dumped this kidnapped victim off in Kingsbury.
Right.
A body in one of the photos is said to have some resemblance to Jalik. And the victim was told that it was, in fact, Jalik. This is all per an investigator. This was reported in the Times Union paper. They said that police recovered all of these photos during a search of Scott Thorpe's house. Apparently, this guy, he fled the area. He went down to Florida and was on the run for a while until the U.S. Marshals caught up with him and arrested him in late June of 2010.
Douche on the run.
Yeah.
Douche on the run.
Thorpe was, of course, locked up and charged with attempted murder and kidnapping, and he was extradited back to Washington County, where at that time he was being held for an eventual trial on the charges. Now, investigators at the Center for Missing and Exploited Children examined these photographs that right. were found in Thorpe's possession at his home, and specifically the one that was thought to be Jalik. Their final ruling, Captain, was that it was not Jalik in that photo. Unfortunately, any of the information out there to the public does not address who it was in the photograph, or my thoughts, maybe it was a doctored photo, that it wasn't anything
right
like what Scott Thorpe was telling us it would be. The good news is we know that whatever it was in that photo, dead body or not, it's not our missing boy, Jaleek.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Mine's feeling a little drained. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapist at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/garage today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/garage. Have you ever thought about why your wireless bill is so damn expensive? It's all just radio waves. And how much can radio waves really cost? It seems like Big Wireless all got together and decided $100 a month. Now, thanks to Mint Mobile, you have a choice. For a limited time, all phone plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plan's jaw-dropping monthly bills and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. So ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get premium wireless for just $15 a month. I love Mint Mobile. They have great quality. They have wonderful service. I love saving money. Put them together and I'm getting great quality, great service, a wonderful phone plan for only $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Everyone loves a good family mystery, especially one with as many twists and turns as June's Journey, a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story. It takes you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. You'll step into the role of June Parker and search for hidden clues to uncover the mystery of her sister's murder. Use your observation skills to quickly uncover key pieces of information that lead to chapters of mystery, danger, and romance. And customize your very own luxurious estate island. Think expansive gardens and beautiful buildings. Collect scraps of information to fill your photo album and learn more about each character. And you can chat and play with or against other players by joining a detective club. Can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
All right, we are back. Cheers, everybody. Thanks for joining us. What a frustrating case.
Yes, frustrating indeed. Cheers to all the people up front. People in the back, come on. Spend up. Spend up.
I think you're just getting excited because you're heading off on your vacation.
I'm going to upset everybody before.
He's been
before
drinking
all
heavily.
Right. All right, Captain, mm-hmm. Captain. We mentioned the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children several times throughout this case. We've mentioned them on the show dozens of times before, not just because they've been involved in other cases that we've covered, but also because we've encouraged people to seek them out and maybe offer up a little bit of donation, be it money or time, because they are doing fantastic work. They are working their damnedest to bring children home. Now, in this case, they've continued to support law enforcement and continued to help in the investigation and the search for Jalique Rainwalker. We mentioned that the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children created an age progression photo of Jalique. But in 2012, that organization took on a larger role. Representatives of the NCMEC, or NCMEC, as John Douglas likes to call it, came to Washington County to undertake the daunting task of reviewing the investigation and all of the evidence compiled by four law enforcement agencies that investigated this case.
Not only are you good at computer, you're good at counting.
I can also go 4-3-2-1 in the opposite direction. The NCMEC report turned out to be 80 pages. It was an 80-page report that was eventually released to law enforcement. Investigators said that it opened up a few leads that would be pursued. After working with the NCMEC in late 2012, the Cambridge Greenwich Police finally changed the classification of Jalique's case. And this is something you were pointing out, and you've been pounding the desk and pounding the table and saying, this is what we need to be doing here. They changed the classification of Jalique's case from a missing child to a probable child homicide.
Yeah.
At a December 2012 press conference, Chief Bell made the announcement that Jalique was the victim of a, quote, probable child homicide, not a runaway. State Police Major Crimes Unit backed this up. Investigators acknowledged that they had exhausted all leads in the case, although they insisted that it was not a cold case. At the press conference, Grandma Barbara and her husband both spoke about how painful it was to continue to have hope every day that Jalique was still alive and yet to have no answers for all this time. A plea was made to the public to help find the missing boy. Authorities also requested that the media stop disseminating the old National Center for Missing and Exploited Children's age-progressed photos of Jalique. Mm-hmm. And the organization took them off of their website. This is weird, right? Because earlier, we are condemning the father for tearing down the posters of the prayer vigil and saying any publicity is good publicity. But here we have law enforcement tearing down their own photos and telling people to tear up the old age progression photos that we sent out. They're doing this because what they're saying at the time is all they are getting from these age progression photos are false leads.
Right.
They're spinning their tires. They're out chasing ghosts.
Well, we see that a lot of times with missing person cases. Even people that we know, people that we're close to, authors that have gone up to other countries and showed people pictures of a girl, and they get these leads. And you think, oh my God, it's going to be solved. It's people misremember. People want to see things that they didn't see. They want to help. People are mostly good-natured people that want to help, and they'll try to give you some information that creates, like you said, a false lead.
Well, and also what you have here, too, is I think is it's really underlining what they believe. It's really putting the exclamation mark on, hey, we no longer believe that we're looking for a missing child.
Yeah, it's sad.
And although at this press conference, there was nobody would actually come out. Well, Chief Bell did not actually come out and name any suspects, but he did say, quote, certain people have been eliminated and certain people have not.
Yeah.
He said flat out that the police have not received any cooperation from Stephen and Jocelyn, and he pleaded with them to come in and sit down with him. The grandparents, on the other hand, well, they did not mince words. They said, if you did nothing wrong and you have nothing to hide, why don't you cooperate with law enforcement to find your son? These were the words of Dennis Smith. In response to the press conference, Stephen and Jocelyn released the following statement.
Oh, they released another note.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is their, this is the way that
this is their third note in the case that they're releasing.
Well, their statement, they have a rebuttal, or at least it's not a no comment thing. I don't know what to make of this. You could take it either way. Either
let's hear it.
Either condemn them for dodging the media or condemn them for releasing a statement. I don't know what to make of it. But they said, despite everything that law enforcement has had to say, we know that he is out there, meaning Jalik, and will return to us someday. We pray that the reclassification of the case will not result in the lessening of efforts to bring Jalik home to his family. The statement also expressed objections to the discontinued use of the age progression photo, arguing that people needed to know who to look out for. This is a statement. One half of the parties that provided this statement was a man that was tearing down posters for a vigil at one time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they know how big of piles of shit they are of people. This Jocelyn, that's the key to it all, right? Is Jocelyn, is what I think. I think she now knows. I think she might not have known before, but I think in maybe a temper tantrum and one of his little rages that he slipped up. Or maybe there was some evidence that he left behind because he's a lazy pile of shit. And he slipped up, and now she knows. And now she's either scared and she feels like she has to protect her children and other adopted child. Or she's also afraid if she goes to police that they're not going to be able to protect her, possibly. Or what is he going to do? Because we know he's a known liar. How much is he going to throw her under the bus? Will he try to blame her for everything that has happened? These are individuals that the kid goes missing and they've done nothing. Everything they've done, every step that they've taken is to muddy the waters. And to me, that's all the proof we need. You're not going to get anywhere unless you find his body. But again, I think in these circumstances, it's like, you know, that's finding a needle in a haystack. Unless somebody comes forward and says, I know what happened and I know some details and I could lead you to an area that could be easier searched. But this son of a bitch ain't going to come forward and say shit. So maybe one day it's going to wear on her more and more, because these are her parents that are coming out saying, you guys are awful people, right? And if you had nothing to do with this, be cooperative with the police. These are her parents. That is going to wear on her and grind on her, and it should. It should wear on you, and whatever God or whatever you think you pray to, that shit ain't going to help you. And when you get to the other side, you're just going to burn in hell for all your sins. That's what I think.
I don't know that they're trying to muddy the waters. Their actions to me look more like pretend the water doesn't exist. I mean, it's right from the get-go, right from Jump Street, Grandma's over at the house and she's saying they're acting like nothing happened.
Well, no, I agree.
They're more concerned about a doctor's appointment and going to a birthday party, and should they feed me some breakfast? It's like as soon as he was gone, regardless of how he was gone,
right?
Even if the kid ran away, there was almost even no mention of it to her. Like they called her and told her this is what's going on. She shows up, wants to help, and they're concerned with other things, and it's been that way since the minute that it happened.
Yeah, but hold on. That's what I'm saying, though. It's kind of weird because it is both happening at the same time. It's back to Forrest Gump. It's both happening at the same time. Yes, acting like nothing happened completely, but also, oh, by the way, we found this note that suggests that he ran away. Now, I might have gave him that as a homework assignment, but I can't remember that. But he probably ran away. Now let's act like nothing happened. And let's do that for a time period. Okay, now things are getting a little hot in the kitchen. Here's some other random note that is typed saying that he's alive or he's fine. I believe wholeheartedly that they're responsible for that note. And so, yes, I agree with you. There's these moments of, let's just act like this kid never existed.
Right.
But I think there are these times where they're throwing wrenches in, you know, into the case to muddy the water.
In regards to the anonymous letter that shows up to media, I don't know, man. That's just a weird thing. You could see it being the parents because they chose to send it to the media. I could also see it being just a complete hoax.
Yeah.
I mean, we have the attorney saying, hey, there's stuff in there that only Jalik would know. That doesn't mean anything. That's that right. Man's opportunity and the parents' opportunity to say, see, we told you so, even if they didn't mail it. They go, oh, we got lucky. Some weirdo decided to mail in an anonymous letter to the newspaper. I would like to talk to a major newspaper and ask them how many anonymous weirdo letters do they get on the reg, right? Like, what do you put the mark at? The quota is it somewhere a couple a week?
Yeah, once a week.
I would imagine back in the day that it was more often. But in late 2013. What was interesting here is that rumors started to swirl that there was an arrest in this case that was going to be happening and soon. But Chief Bell said that there was no truth to these reports. So we got all excited and worked up for nothing.
Yeah. Half chub, you know.
What seemed to spawn these rumors was the current Washington County DA announced on the anniversary of Jalik's disappearance that he believed a prosecution for Jalik's murder could go forward. He didn't name anyone, but reading between the lines here, this likely meant that he believed that there was sufficient evidence to bring charges against Stephen Kerr. Now, it's important to note that this public statement was issued in the middle of a bid for re-election, which the DA did not win. The current one did not win. So when the new DA took over, his office reviewed the police investigative file for the case, but did not proceed with any prosecution, citing double jeopardy as the reason that the no body murder case should be put on hold until the evidence was rock solid in the case. Then in 2018, the case, received a terrible blow. We had the man who had headed up the investigation from the beginning, the man who refused to let the case die, the man who never gave up on finding Jalik, Chief George Bell. Very sadly, he passed away suddenly in March of 2018. According to the Times Union, in his 39-year law enforcement career, Chief Bell had never missed a day of work. 39 years working law enforcement, Chief Bell never missed a day of work. He had been having flu-like symptoms leading up to this, and he died of a heart attack after leaving a hospital in Bennington, Vermont. In 2019, an article in the Post Star says, Jalik's disappearance spawned one of the most in-depth investigations by a local, state, and federal officials in Washington County in decades. And even after 13 years, a group of investigators continued to work on the case. According to the same publication, Washington County District Attorney Tony Jordan's office has been reviewing the evidence police amassed, which was turned over to his office in the spring of 2018, shortly before Bell's death. They are cautiously assessing the material in the file with an eye toward possible prosecution. This here is another bizarre thing in this case here, Captain. You gotta wonder, how strong is any of this evidence? How strong is any of this case? What do they have? What could they possibly have? Is it a case where it's just minus the body?
Right.
And once we find that, boom, we're moving forward with charges. So this guy should be on the edge of his seat at all times. He should be very afraid, because we are one piece away from convicting this guy and putting him away for a very long time. Or is this posturing to try to get this dude to make a mistake? But again, he's pretending as nothing has happened.
I think there's a lot of stuff out there in the open against the son of a bitch. So what do they have behind closed doors? Let's say it's equal to. Now we got a pretty strong case. But we always know that they're weak cases if you don't have a body. So focus on that. Find the body. Once you find the body, then you can bring this bastard to trial. And he can spend the rest of his life behind bars. And once you figure out that his wife knew about it, she could spend the rest of her life behind bars as well.
See, I don't know that I share that same opinion. I don't know that I believe that Jocelyn is convinced that Stephen did something. And I say that because her actions before the boy went missing were to protect the children in the house. She even complained to others, her mom and other people, that Stephen wasn't behaving or parenting the way that she wished that he would.
Right.
So for me, I kind of look at it and go, I really wonder if she truly felt that he had done something, that all the other children are potentially in danger as well. Now, we would know based off of the ages that we listed earlier that here in 2020, all of these kids would be adults now. They would be young adults, but they would be adults. But still, you would have a period of over 10 years to be concerned that he could do something to one of these other children. And I always like to rely on the previous actions of an individual will usually lead you to what their future actions and behavior will be. And that's what we saw on the outside looking in before in regards to Jocelyn. I'm not so naive to believe that she doesn't maybe at some level suspect something. But what I truly think is going on here is one of two situations. Well, I shouldn't say that, because here I go narrowing myself to two situations when immediately a third popped into mind. Let's say, and you've been hinting at this a little bit along the way, and I can agree with this a little bit. There is a chance that there's something so much more horrible under the surface going on that never reached any of the public, never reached anybody that knew these people, that there's just some really bad, horrible stuff going on, and it had been going on for a very long time. Yeah. There is always that small possibility that that is a truth. However, where I lean with this case, and I'm going to go a little glass half full and a little glass half empty at the same time.
Okay.
Why are we laughing?
I don't even know what that means.
Well, you will when I finish my thought. Okay. So where I'm going with this is one of two things I think is probably likely here. Either A, Jalik did run away, and his adoptive father was kind enough and concerned enough, please hear the sarcasm in my voice, to give him enough time and opportunity to get as far away as possible so that he could not find the boy and nobody else could find him and return him to the household. If that did not happen, I feel like he's convinced his wife that that's what happened.
All right. So do you want to know what I think?
Sure.
I think we all know what I think, so we don't have to go over it, right?
Well,
this, the, you know, the, I think he's responsible. I think she knows, or like you said, there's something. Maybe it's the way he told the story one time. Maybe it's her finding the jacket that he claimed that he would have been in when they were looking for the kid. I think there's something in her deep down in her gut that's telling her this guy murdered a child and I've been supporting him. Again, maybe also in a sense, if I'm here, that I can protect my children. But it might not be a confirmed knowledge, but I think I'd be really interested to see what they have behind closed doors, what evidence that they have that hasn't been shown to the public. But I think it's really going to take finding a body in order to bring the charges against this individual that need to be brought against him.
Yeah, and I think you're hitting on something really interesting there, Captain, because there's a lot of gray area and there's a lot of what we do not know about Steven's cell phone that they were tracking that night. We know that they were tracking it, okay? We know that they believe he was out driving that gold minivan around that night. I have to believe, with all these swirling rumors that they keep going back to time and time again every so often, that we have evidence to prosecute. An arrest might be happening soon. I wonder if they have more information that's based around that cell phone and based around activity that they know took place with that gold van that night. Yeah. And here is a statement from a former state police investigator who's now retired. And he was involved in this investigation for 6 years or so. And he said that there was significant, he used the word significant evidence in the case that has not been revealed publicly. And he went on to say that the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, when they reviewed the case years earlier that we reported on in this episode, he said they deemed it to be, quote, prosecution ready. So you have to wonder, yes, are they just looking for that one final piece? Now, this is a case that more than, just as much as any case out there, but more so than a lot of them, needs the public's help. We need information from the public. And if anybody knows anything at all in regards to their suspicions about Steven, their suspicions about where Jaleek could be or what could have happened to this young boy, then they need to come forward. It's been too long. And report this and point law enforcement in the right direction, please. Again, anybody with information, they're asking that you contact either the New York State Major Crimes Unit or the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And we'll have those numbers posted for you on our website at truecrimegarage.com on the blog for Jaleek Rainwalker's case.
For our bonus show called Off the Record, check us out on Stitcher Premium. Also, if you would like to check out our old episodes, they're all for free on the Stitcher app. Just go to the iTunes store, download the Stitcher app, and listen to all the old catalog for free.
And before we wrap up, we have a little recommended reading. This week we have a really good one, as always. It's called Hellhound on His Trail, The Stalking of Martin Luther King Jr. and the International Hunt for His Assassin. This is by Hampton Sides. He's a best-selling author. Hellhound on His Trail is an intense narrative about the assassination of a great man and great leader, Martin Luther King Jr., and one of the largest manhunts in American history that led investigators to Canada, Portugal, and England. So check out Hellhound on His Trail by Hampton Sides, and you can find that title and many more at truecrimegarage.com on the recommended page. And until next week, Be good, be kind, and don't litter.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.